Good evening. This is Life Rattle, the story show. I'm your host, Lori Callis. Tonight, on Life Rattle number 1233, we present a new story by Mark Bialy and a Life Rattle classic by David Penhale. Both of the stories we bring you tonight are thick with tension. Both are from the viewpoint of a young person who feels the strain between their parents and a grandparent. With reasons left unsaid, we, the listeners, are left in the same position as the narrators, who squirm uncomfortably, unsure of why or how things went awry, and must face unexpected behavior from the adults who they expect to be solid and dependable. Our first writer, Mark Bialy, was born in 1991 to Polish parents in Oakville, Ontario, where he has lived his entire life. Mark is in university, studying biology and chemistry in hopes of one day making it to medical school. His story tonight focuses on a father and son, his father and a grandfather who he has never met. The pain felt by both older men is tangible, yet we don't know the source, and perhaps that is just as well, because any reason for their estrangement is moot at this point. All we see is the resulting pain in the here and now. Let's listen then as Mark Bialy reads Grandpa's Visit tonight on Life Rattle.
Grandpa's Visit by Mark Bialy. I sit on the couch in the family room and sip hot tea. My eyes watch SportsCenter on the TV, but my mind wonders what my grandpa will look like when he visits today. I am 15 years old, and I have never seen my dad's father, not even in pictures. Dad strolls into the kitchen smelling of Ralph Lauren Polo cologne. He grabs his wallet off of the counter and the keys to the Mercedes-Benz that hang by the microwave. "I'll be back in a few hours," Dad says. He heads for the garage door. Dad rarely drives the Mercedes. My grandfather lives in Toronto, where my dad grew up. I know little about my dad's side of the family. I think he has three brothers. His mother died before I was born, and my grandpa has lived alone ever since. If it wasn't for my mom nagging Dad to invite my grandpa over, I don't think I would be meeting him. Dad calls and says they are close. My sister Amanda and I hustle upstairs into our rooms and change into our church clothes. I put on khaki pants, a white dress shirt, and a blue Argyle sweater. Mom cooks meatloaf, cauliflower, and mashed potatoes in the kitchen. "Amanda, Marek, can one of you set the table?" Mom shouts from the main floor. "I'll be right down," I yell. I spray Hummer H2 cologne on my chest and pace out of my room. Amanda combs her long brown hair in her bathroom. I take 5 gold-rimmed ceramic plates out of the oak cabinet and set them on the dining room table. I place silver cutlery around each plate in standard fashion. Fork on the left, knife on the right, and dessert spoon above. Amanda scurries down the stairs and sets the napkins and glasses. I open the blinds and the doorbell rings. Amanda and I stare at each other. Mom strides past the dining room to the front of the house and opens the door. "Why, hello there. It's so good to finally meet you. I'm Peter's wife, Margaret," Mom says. I hear my mom and my grandfather exchange kisses. "Yes, yes, Margaret. I am so glad to be here and see you," Grandpa replies. "You are so beautiful." I look at Amanda, and we inch out of the dining room. I pass the washroom and see a slender man standing about 6 inches shorter than my dad. He wears a baseball cap, a leather jacket, and loafers. His small head, beady eyes, and sharp nose contrast with Dad's long head, wide-set eyes, and round nose. "Jadek, hi," I say. I give my grandpa a long hug. Amanda does the same. Grandpa squints and cranes his neck towards us. "My goodness, you kids are so tall. Marek, you look just like your father," Grandpa says. "He gets that from everyone," Mom says and chuckles. "Come in, Tato. Make yourself at home. Dinner will be ready soon." Dad hangs Grandpa's jacket in the closet and places his cap on the closet shelf. I lead my grandfather into the family room and we sit on the couch. Dad changes the TV channel to golf and sits on the single chair to our left. "You know, Tat, Marek is doing well in school," Dad says. Grandpa leans forward. "What's that?" Grandpa says. I notice a hearing aid in his ear. "Marek is doing well in school," Dad says, louder this time. "Oh, that is great to hear." Grandpa looks at me and smiles. I smile back. "Thank you," I say. Grandpa turns his head and watches golf. He sits with his feet crossed and his hands between his thighs. His arched back doesn't touch the backrest of the couch. Dad fiddles with his thumbs. "Do you like watching golf, Jadek?" I ask. "It's okay. I sometimes watch it at home," he replies. The conversation ends there. I sit quietly beside my grandpa. He breathes heavy and blinks slowly. I want to make conversation with my grandfather, but I don't know what to talk about. I don't know anything about him. Mom finally walks into the room and says, "Dinner is ready, everyone." We get up and walk to the dining room. Dad and Grandpa take the heads of the table. Mom holds a camera. "Marek, Amanda, stand beside Jadek and I'll take some pictures," she says. Amanda and I huddle around Grandpa. Dad's eyes glisten from across the table and he smiles. Mom takes 3 pictures. "Perfect," Mom says. "Now let's eat." Grandpa tucks his napkin into the neck of his sweater and loads 1 slice of meatloaf, 2 spoons of mashed potatoes, and a piece of cauliflower onto his plate. He leans his head over his plate and struggles to cut his meatloaf. Rough hands and bruised fingernails show the remnants of his days as a railroad mechanic. Dad sits with his elbows on the table and scoffs down mashed potatoes. Amanda stares at me from across the table, glances at Grandpa, and pouts her bottom lip. Sounds of the golf game on the TV set from the family room and the screeches of forks and knives on plates fill the dining room air. Grandpa chews with his head down. "You know, Tato, Marek painted that picture of Pope John Paul behind me," Mom says. Grandpa's head shoots up. "Wow, that is beautiful. When Peter was a little boy, he always sat by the fridge and drew cartoons," Grandpa says. "He would..." "Tat, nobody wants to hear about that," Dad mumbles through a mouthful of food. Mom peers over at Dad and says, "Piotrek, of course we want to hear about it." Amanda and I nod. Grandpa smiles. He looks at his food and swirls his mashed potatoes. Grandpa doesn't attempt to share any more memories. He grabs his piece of cauliflower by the stem and eats it with his head down. Spots of gravy cover his napkin, and a bit of cauliflower rests on the top corner of his lip. He finishes his food and wipes his mouth with his napkin, and then notices gravy smears on his chin and wipes them off with the palm of his hand. "Would you like some dessert, Tato?" Mom asks. "I have cheesecake in the fridge." "No, thank you, Margaret. I should get going. I have things to do at home. Thank you so much for a great dinner," and for inviting me to your home. Grandpa pushes his seat back, stands up, reaches into his pocket, and pulls out two checks. Marek and Amanda, these are for you. He hands Amanda one check and me the other. I look at the amount. $3,000. Dad sees the amount and his eyes fill with tears. Tat, you don't have to do this. This is too much, he murmurs. No, these are for the kids. I have missed out on so much that this is the least I can do for them, Grandpa says. Put the money in your bank account, kids. Thank you, Jadek, I say. I give Grandpa a long hug. Thanks, Jadek, Amanda says. She hugs Grandpa, too. Grandpa walks to the front door and slips on his loafers. Dad pulls Grandpa's coat and baseball cap out of the closet and hands them to him. Grandpa zips up his coat, bends the brim of his cap, and places it on his head. Amanda, Mom, and I take turns hugging Grandpa. Dad grabs the keys to the Mercedes and opens the front door. Grandpa smiles, turns, and walks out the door. I'll be back in a few hours, Dad says.
That was Mark Bialy reading his story, Grandpa's Visit. Our second story tonight is a classic, written and read by David Penhill. Born in Toronto in 1948, the younger of two boys, David Penhill grew up in the West End of the city. After dropping out of university, David worked for his father's roofing business for 6 years before returning to school and finishing his degree in languages. David began teaching in 1976 and taught full-time until the early 90s when he went on leave and spent 2 years in Dubai in the United Arab Emirates. He also taught for a summer in Pakistan. Since the time we recorded David reading, he has published his first novel, Passing Through, with Cormorant Books. David Penhill now lives in Toronto, where he teaches writing and is working on his second novel. Though similar in theme to Bialy's Grandpa's Visit, David's story incorporates an extra element of tension with an older brother who adds his own twist of pressure to the family mix. Let's listen now as David Penhill reads his story, The Visit, on Life Rattle.
The Visit by David Penhale. Use the real silver. My mother stabbed a finger behind her back and fastened the top of this damn thing for me. Something was up. My mother never wore the white silk dress from Simpsons in the house. She spun around. Tendrils of her fine brown hair flew across her nape as I fumbled with the snap fastener. She smelled of Pears soap. The real silver? I asked. I had cleaned the tableware that morning. I had smeared each heavy knife, fork, and spoon with Silvo and buffed until I could see my blurred reflection. I had snapped each polished piece into its slot in the velvet-lined walnut box. We used the real silver at Christmas and Easter, not on a Sunday in February. My dad bustled into the dining room, elbows out, pulling at the ends of his bow tie. He wore his best suit, the blue pinstripe. He looked preoccupied. Go see if your brother is ready. I hurried down the hall to Chris's bedroom. Chris was 15. I was 10. We lived as strangers with the same parents. At 14, Chris started taking off for days at a time. One night last month, a police car came to our house. Chris sat in the back seat. The other kids in my class told me that my brother lived wild, sleeping in parked cars, stealing from stores. I poked my head around the door. All hands on deck. Chris leaned into a mirror, steel comb in hand. He bobbed his head from side to side and flicked at his hair with the tip of the comb. Be there in a sec, little bro. My father pushed past me. His exploits as the star of Western Technical's wrestling team back in the 30s form part of our family legend, and for a man who weighed more than 200 pounds, he was fast in his feet. Even in his 50s, my father looked like an athlete, and he liked to say that he could go back into the ring any time. Chris was tall, skinny, and gawky. I was short for my age and pudgy. The all sorts, my mother called the three of us. No two alike. Button up your shirt, my father said to Chris. He shoved Chris away from the mirror. And forget the ducktail. Comb that mess out. As I reset the table, I heard the crunch of tires on snow. I looked out the dining room window. Large snowflakes drifted, the way they do when you shake those little glass globes with their little worlds of houses and streetlights and skaters. My grandmother stepped from the big black Oldsmobile she had driven all the way from Montreal. She stood for a moment, square in her feet, then tugged at the sleeves of her lamb's wool coat, pulled her purse into the crook of her arm, and marched up the front steps. During dinner, I listened. I knew what to expect. Chit-chat, spiced with sudden, direct questions. With no warning, Grandma would fix one of us with that inspector stare and zing us. She turned to my father first. How's business, Harvey? Fine, my father said. This wasn't true, I knew. The economy had gone into recession. Orders for plumbing supplies had slowed. My dad worried. Twice that winter, when I got up in the night to use the bathroom, I found him in the kitchen, where he sat in the dark, smoked a cigarette, and stared out the windows at the shapes of the trees. When I asked him what was the matter, he shooed me away. Well, the house could use a coat of paint this spring, Grandma said. My father agreed. More chit-chat, then my turn came. And how are your studies going, young man? I straightened in my seat. Fine, I said. Child, I wouldn't call 51% in math fine. No, ma'am, I said. When in church I heard people say, from whom no secrets are hid, sometimes I thought they meant my grandmother. But you'll do better. I smiled. You're looking well, Muriel, Grandma said. My mother colored, and her lips formed a thin line. I'm fine, Flo, she said to her mother-in-law. More chit-chat, then my grandmother fixed her gaze on Chris. So, Chris, how's the new school? Just peachy, Chris said. Just peachy. That killed me. I stifled a grin. Just what? Just peachy. Chris pulled back his thin shoulders and cocked his head. And this, Grandma spooned consomme into her soup bowl. The silver ladle shimmered in the clear liquid. This trouble you got into at the billiard hall. Little pitchers have big ears, my father said. They do, Grandmother agreed. She glanced briefly my way. Can we say, Chris, that it's all behind you? Chris had buttoned his white shirt to the neck, not halfway open the way he usually wore it. He had combed his hair straight back. His hair was wet. He looked like a choir boy. A grandmother's idea of a choir boy. Sure, Chris said breezily. Grandmother fell silent. She looked into Chris's eyes. She stared at Chris. Behind me, Chris said in a quieter voice. Good, my grandmother said. Then we shan't speak of it again, shall we? My mother served dessert, orange sherbet, in the living room. The adults chatted about the Sullivan show, about my cousin Paula's recent wedding in Montreal, about the high price of gas. Chris and I sat together on the piano bench. I knew what came next. My grandmother would review the family photographs that had accumulated since her last visit. Then the time would come for my brother and I to perform for her. Chris and I had rehearsed for weeks. He played the guitar, and I sang Red River Valley. My father dug out the photo albums and stacked them at my grandmother's feet. My mother settled herself beside my grandmother on the red velvet couch. My mother crossed her legs and arranged her party dress around her. From time to time, one of my mother's hands drifted down to pluck at the skirt's pleats. "And where was this taken?" my grandmother asked. "At the cottage," my mother said. "My, Chris has shot up this year." "Yes, he has." My grandmother turned a page. "And where was this taken?" "At the scout banquet." The conversation ground on. When my grandmother opened the third thick album, Chris leaned over and whispered, "Cover me, bro." "No," I hissed. "Stay here." Ignoring me, Chris got up, tiptoed out of the room in that exaggerated, impish way of his, knees high, arms aslant. His exit would be a joke. Only I saw him leave. Cigarettes. More chit-chat. An hour passed. My mother said in a bright voice, "Well, time for our little show." My heart pounded. "Where's your brother?" My father looked around the room. My grandmother touched her lips. "Chris just stepped out for a minute," I said. My mother said that on the phone to our creditors. My father had just stepped out for a minute. "I'll go get him," I said. Though I wanted to run, I made myself walk slowly. The rest of the house was in darkness. I scrubbed a palm along the wall until I found a light switch. I walked through the front hall, past its mirrors and sconces, its showy brass umbrella stand and its faded Persian carpet. I walked through the dining room, through the kitchen, and down the back hall to Chris's room. Empty. I knew then he wasn't in the house, but I kept looking. I ran through every room on the main floor. I ran through the basement. I turned on the lights as I went. Finally, I slunk back to the living room. "Chris isn't in the house," I said. No one said anything. "I'm sorry," I said. My mother laid a hand on my grandmother's arm. My father sprang from his chair. "He can't have gone far," he said. He stiffened his back and strode to the front door. "I'll just have a look." I fell in beside him, but he said, "You stay here, son." My father opened the door and stepped into the fresh snow. Long minutes passed. My mother got up, crossed the room, and turned on the radio. Dance music played. My father's suit coat lay on the gray hassock. I picked up the coat and walked outside. My father stood on the sidewalk, in his shirt sleeves and slippers, looking up and down the street. He held a wrestler's stance, arms circled, hands spread, fingers twitching. A car sped by. Snow swirled in its wake. My father spun around. "Where's your brother?" he shouted. "I don't know." My father darted towards me. He slapped me with an open hand. "Don't you lie to me. You know. Tell me where he went." My eyes burning, I turned towards our house. Light blazed from every window.
That was David Penhale reading his story, The Visit. This concludes Life Rattle number 1233. Arnie Ackman recorded David Penhale reading his story. My name is Lori Callis. I recorded Mark Bialy reading his story. Life Rattle was created by Guy Allen and Arnie Ackman. Tune into Life Rattle next Thursday evening to hear more stories.